This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. This is exciting. I am back in the studio, and I'm so happy. I still have this face mask on me. Just got to clear it up. Anybody looking at me at YouTube, I think I look a little bit strange. I took the mask off, but it's stuck around my neck. Anyway, wow. Can you believe it? I'm still like, yeah. Anyway, today is a very special day because I'm going to be talking to two authors who have written books for children. And right now, I feel so, so sorry for the kids who are just living through this, because for myself, I just had such a wonderful childhood, free and wild in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, fresh fresh air every day. That's what we lived on. Fresh air, peanut butter, and jelly sandwiches, and We didn't have thermoses. We had mason jars full of Kool-Aid, and that was our childhood. And especially in the summers, we just ran wild. Absolutely glorious, glorious place to be. And so, for so many of you kids who are out there and not out there, in the houses, one of the things I did this weekend, I collected all of my craft materials. You know, I used to teach Sunday school, so I had lots of craft materials, and I put it together and gave it to a young lady in our building who I know that it will be something different for her to do, something to give her a challenge and to learn how to do some crafting. And so if you have extra stuff around the house that you've been, you know, just sort of hoarding yourself, you didn't know what to do with, and if it's useful and it's something the kids could do crafting with, think of putting together a package, and I'm sure you can find a place or a child who would really appreciate it. I also want to say, you know, my husband is listening. He's home, and I am so happy that he is home, because he had to go in and out of the hospital during this horrible time, and we couldn't see him. And not for this virus, but for something else. And so it's just good to know that he's listening to me today, because he couldn't listen to me in the hospital. They don't have radios there. So, and also special thanks to my son. He came down from Madison, Wisconsin. He left the snow, and literally there was still snowing a few weeks ago. Can you believe it? And he is here, and he's helping me, and it's just wonderful to have him. So I don't mind actually quarantining with him. I'm glad. I'll send a note to the governor. Tell him he has to stay for a month. He can't go back because it's just a joy. And he's here, and I'm so thrilled just to see him every morning, because when they go away to college and you don't see them for long periods of time, you really miss them. So it's just wonderful that Daniel is here and helping me so much. And then, of course, I'm just waiting now. Is Big Ed, is Becky on the phone yet? Okay, I'm waiting for Becky Baines to be calling. And she is, she's written the National Geographic, well, she's the editor for National Geographic Kids Almanac for 2021. Can you believe it's 2021? It's going to be 2021. I was thinking for many people, 2020 is going to be called the boring 20s, but it doesn't have to be. And if, we look back on the roaring 20s, we're pretty, pretty wild. And the boring 20s are what you make of it. If you want to find something to keep your mind busy, to keep yourself interested, one of the best ways is to write a book. Or if you're lucky enough, to be an editor who gets to do all sorts of wonderful things. And I'm so happy to welcome Becky Baines back to Joy on Paper to talk about National Geographic Kids Almanac 2021. Hi, Becky.
Hi, how are you guys doing this morning?
Oh, well, we're in Florida, so we're happy. We have beautiful weather, it's so funny. And I was, as I'm driving to the studio, I'm thinking about you because, you know, generally speaking, when I drive to the studio, I drive through this lovely community of very large, beautiful homes with beautiful lawns, and you never see any children. I mean, never. Years I drove down that street, and there were no kids outside. And now suddenly you see kids in the yard, and it's like,
yeah.
Or kids walking with their parents in the middle of the day, or they're biking, and it's like, whoa, there are really kids in those houses.
Yeah, that's so funny. I guess this whole, you know, time period we've gone through has really changed people's daily habits, and it's good that kids are getting outside more. This is there's some things we can take away from this whole thing that hopefully will stay with us a while.
And then hopefully parents, well, you know, parents are learning the joys of homeschooling, because I had that joy I homeschooled my boys right from day one, because by the time they were five, they were reading the Hardy Boys, so I had no choice. You know, like, I couldn't send them to kindergarten. So, but I had so much fun homeschooling, and I've always told people, you know, that those are the most wonderful, wonderful years. And so I was really, you know, when I heard some parents complaining, oh, well, how am I going to do it? I say to them, just have fun. Make it fun. Let the kids learn what they want to learn. And one of the ways that they want to learn is if they have a National Geographic almanac. I get so thrilled with every Nat Geo person who comes on this program, because you guys are like really lucky people to be working for such a group. I mean, like, I would pay to work for Nat Geo because you have so much fun.
Yes, we have so much fun working on the books that we put together, because we basically get to go out and look for all the coolest information that we can find on the planet and bring it back and, you know, put it together in a really fun way with all sorts of colorful pictures and designs. And, you know, when your work day, one of the biggest issues you deal with is whether to put, you know, a shark or a panda on the cover of a book. You can call yourself pretty lucky. So there's a lot of serious work that goes into it, but we have a lot of fun as well.
Oh, it is. It is just, you can feel it. For myself, I think I mentioned it to you the last time you were on. We were talking, I think, about Falcon's Feather, one of the Explore Academy. I love that series.
Oh, that's so great!
Now, has Nat Geo set up the Explorers Academy boat?
Oh, not quite yet, but we hope to get there, you know, one day.
Well, when
you never know.
When this finishes, I can tell you, when you have that, I would never go on any cruise, because I'm not the kind of person to sit around just cruising. But boy, if you come out with a Nat Geo Explorers boat, you have to invite me. I will be like right there. I will blog or flog or whatever they call it, live, because those books are so great. All the adventures in those books are great. And that's why I'm telling, today I'm actually doing books for kids, because after you, I'm talking to some other authors. Again, books for kids. And it is so important to have these wonderful books for children.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I think that what this, you know, kind of international crisis has made us really see is that these tools that parents can use at home with their children are more important than ever. You know, homeschooling is such a wonderful gift that parents are able to give kids. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not the reality for every parent that they're able to do this, because a lot of parents do have to work full time. But when you can come home from work, or when you can, you know, take the time to homeschool your children, you can use these tools, and we call them edutainment because they're educational and they're entertaining. So these are books that kids really, really want to dive into. The content is really fun and engaging, but while they're reading all these really fun, cool facts about our world, they're also learning something. And so when you can kind of take that pressure away of giving them something that's really heavy and textbooky and feels kind of daunting to them, and give them something that has cool pictures and fun little fact call outs and fun feature stories and explorer profiles, that's where kids really, really want to get engaged in learning. So these are the type of books, especially with the Almanac, which is kind of this useful tool that has everything in it from, you know, animals to history to space to science to a homework help section where it has all the information on our countries, our states, our presidents. So there's even information on how to write a report when they need help doing that. So it's kind of just a useful tool to have around.
It is, and it's, as you said, there are quite a few sections, I think 11 sections, and each of them offer, you know, different insights into a subject. And it's wonderful how a child sometimes can be, well, it's like an adult. I became obsessed with a certain subject simply by reading the footnote in a book once. And I forgot about the book, but that footnote stuck with me. And I started doing research just on that footnote. And it's led me to write a book of 100,000 words, which I don't know if I'll ever get published, but just from one little footnote. So that's why an almanac, I think, is so ideal, because you never know what a kid will grab onto. It might be something about space. It might be something about, you know, that has something to do with culture, something to do with green energy, whatever. And then they will just run with it. And it can change their lives and create a career.
Yeah, definitely. You know, kids really at that, you know, this book is really geared towards 8 to 12, but at that kind of 8 to 10 years old, or even younger than that, I would say 6 years old, you can pick up and really enjoy this book. But in that kind of younger area, that's where kids really start to grab a hold of a concept and dig deep. They really start to have favorites. They have favorite animals. They have favorite places. They have favorite subjects that they really just want to throw themselves into and explore and explore and explore. And you talk to some of our National Geographic explorers today and you ask them, you know, when did you first decide you wanted to become a marine biologist? When did you first decide you wanted to become an astronomer? And they'll all tell you that they discovered their love of that subject as children. And the best way to inspire that love of learning about our world is to give kids a book.
Well, for me, when I was a kid, it was, why did I become a world traveler? Why, the minute I graduated, I was on the road because of Nat Geo books, the magazine. That yellow magazine would come and it would be, well, we just sit there and pore over it, and it would be take us to all these fascinating places that later on I visited.
Yeah, you know, we hear that a lot. National Geographic is such an institution, and it's been around, you know, for over 100 years. And, you know, my grandparents and even my great-grandparents read National Geographic magazine. And it has such a place in people's history, in their homes, and they have fond memories from their childhood of that yellow border magazine. And it's just such an honor to be part of an organization that has inspired so many people to travel the world and learn about new cultures and new places. That's one of my favorite things about working there.
Well, let's talk about some of the really fun things that are in here. One of them, that talk about the high-tech discovery of the Maya pyramids.
Oh, so I call myself a history. I'm not a history buff. I'm more like a history nerd, where I really love history, but I don't know as much about it as I should. So that's why I am so thrilled there's so many sections in here. But yeah, so part of what's fun about each section in this book is that we update 40% of the content each year. So some of the things that remain the same are things that, you know, aren't going to change from year to year about, you know, geography and maps and some of the science stuff, like water tables and the rock cycle. But in each section, we do have these fun feature stories. And so in the history section, we have a feature on one of them is the search for Alexander's lost tomb. One of them is the Mayan pyramids, and it's about how scientists are now using technology to make these archaeological discoveries because we can use, it's called, something like space archaeology or something like that, where they're using essentially satellites to detect interesting kind of irregularities in the Earth's surface at these historical sites, so they know where to look for new sites that haven't been discovered yet. And it's that kind of histories, mysteries. It's like a international kind of hide and seek, search and find thing about history that I think is so cool. My other favorite thing in here is that there's a whole section on code breaking about how spies used to send different codes and how people used to crack different codes. And one of my favorite messages or my favorite aspects was Belgian spies during World War One used to weave secret messages into scarves. They used to knit patterns into scarves that they would then send to the recipient of the secret message. They can then decode, and it was just based on the knitting pattern. And it's just, it's really fun tidbits like that. And then, of course, you teach kids how to make their own invisible ink so they can become super sneaky themselves.
Well, there are so many aspects to this book that are just fantastic. Let's talk for a minute about the challenge, the Almanac Challenge for 2021. And what happened with the 2021?
Yeah, so we have a Almanac Challenge in every single book, and it's a really fun way to highlight some of the incredible work that our National Geographic Explorers are doing around the world, because they're always actively involved in the challenge. It's kind of a big focus for us because kids are really interested about many aspects of our planet, including, you know, endangered animals, conservation, pollution, but they often feel helpless to do anything about it. So this is one of the ways that kids can really get actively involved. It gives kids a purpose. It gives them a voice to share their ideas with the world. And so last year's theme, kind of, there's a theme every year, was about visionaries. And so we challenged kids to think 10 years into the future and envision a change that would make the world better. And so the submissions we received, they covered a range of issues, everything from, you know, how to cure cancer to saving an endangered species. But our grand prize winner came from Kai, who lives in Hawaii. And Kai had this great idea of how to rid the ocean of plastic waste and save marine life. And the first step was to ban single-use plastics. And then the next step was to create a plastic-eating enzyme that would break down any plastics left in the ocean. And the enzyme would be safely deployed from a self-propelled machine, so it didn't create any additional waste. And it looked like a whale, so it wouldn't, you know, spook any of the marine life. So we thought that was incredibly, incredibly ingenious. And then it actually inspired this year's challenge, which is revolves around this kind of this year-long theme we have called Kids Versus Plastic, which raises awareness about the problems that single-use plastics are causing to our planet. And this one encourages kids to submit a story telling us creative ways they've been able to reduce single-use plastics in their home, their community, or their school. And, of course, there's super cool prizes, and every year we pick a grand prize winner. So it's a fun way to get kids actively engaged.
So where do kids log on to this?
So if you want to find out more, of course, you know, the information is about the challenge that will come up for next year is in this year's Almanac, so Almanac 2021. But also you can log on to our website, which is kids.nationalgeographic.com, and you can find all the information there. There's also tons of resources on there if you want to read more about some of our fun articles at National Geographic. We have some cool Explore videos there. We have games. There's a bunch of quizzes, weird but true facts. There's a lot of stuff to do online at the kids' website, so it's a really fun place to hang out.
Well, all you grandparents out there who can't visit with your kids yet, grandkids yet, this is an ideal book to send them, and then you can Skype or you can FaceTime or whatever you want and talk with the children. So I would buy myself a book and a kid a book. And then, you know, and as a matter of fact, if you have a bunch of grandkids, you can Zoom and talk about the book. Send the book to each of the kids, wherever they are across the country or even across the world, and you can all Zoom together and talk about your favorite sections and ask, you know, bet you didn't know. And it can be a game. It can become a Zoom game, you know, for kids. Just it'd be so much fun to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I've done a Zoom scavenger hunt with my nieces. We're all tell them a fun fact, and then I'll have them go find an object based on that fact. And it's a really fun way to engage with them using the book.
Well, see, that's exactly, that's a wonderful idea. And if you send it to, you know, the children in your life, and then pick out the sections, each child might be asked to find something in the house that relates to a certain chapter. There are all sorts of wonderful things you can do. And, well, always with any Nat Geo book, it's just a joy to have and a wonderful gift. And this one is particularly, I don't have to say the photography is fantastic. The layout, I love the way that you've laid it out. And I didn't introduce you properly because you are, what's your title now? You're vice president and editorial director?
Yes, Vice President, Editorial Director of National Geographic Kids Book.
You're a big shot. Oh, wow.
I wish.
and of course, you have some other things going. We have a few minutes, so tell us some other things that you're working on.
Oh, so we are working on so much these days. So we have the Weird But True, National Geographic Kids Weird But True show, which runs on Sirius XM. That's on Kids Place Live. Which is something really fun, and we're hoping to podcast that very soon. We're working on, we have a website right now for parents that's a great resource called Nat Geo at Home. And Nat Geo at Home is a place where parents can go to find lots of educational content, worksheets, and things like that that they can download and they can use with their kids as they're trying to homeschool in this time. So that's another thing that we have, and it's been a great project for us. A lot of learning there.
Well, how did you luck into this job, Nat Geo? We have a few minutes. Tell us, how did you do that? Did you start from the bottom, the mailroom, and up?
I started as an administrative assistant. Yeah, right out of college, administrative assistant, and then I took a editorial assistant role in kids books, and I've just been in kids books ever since, climbing the ladder. And so here I am. It was where I was meant to be. Funny animals and gross facts are my calling. What can I say?
Yeah. Yeah, you do tend to like gross facts, but
I do.
Yeah, it's so really wonderful, and it shows that, you know, you never know where life will lead you. As a kid, did you have favorite books?
I did. I loved the Little House series as a kid. That was absolutely my favorite. And actually, my sister read those to us. I was really lucky to grow up with two big sisters, and my oldest sister was an avid reader, and she would read me and my middle sister. She would read us the Laura Ingalls Wilder books every night, and we absolutely adored those. I was actually not a big reader myself, which my mom's probably cringing if she heard this, but I discovered that I, at a very young age, that I really liked to write. That was my creative outlet. And so while I was not a voracious reader until later in life, I wrote everything. I was big into journaling. And so, and my parents definitely supported that. So Yeah, I definitely.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned journaling, because I just gave last week. I had this empty journal that's been hanging around for years, and I've been so busy, and I gave it to a young girl in our building, and I said to her, "Journal, write, you know, to have your thoughts during this period, to actually write them down in your hand, because, you know." Whatever you write on the Facebook or you write in your, you know, on the computer, that's not the same as 50 years from now having something written in your own hand in a journal. It is.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And it's, you know, it's great record keeping. My grandmother is now 92 and she writes down everything. She's written down the story of her life. She's kept letters and journals and, now that, you know, she is in her 90s, we've started to sit down and read them with her and ask her questions. And that's also something that we've encouraged in our books at National Geographic, is for kids to sit down with older relatives and interview them and ask them questions. And this is a really good time to do it, especially, I know a lot of states are opening up, but here in Washington, D.C., we're still stuck at home. And this is a really good time to get on Zoom and interview your grandparents or interview your older relatives and write down their stories. Because what kids don't realize is that, you know, these family legacies will disappear unless someone records them. And as a generation, we don't write things like we used to. So that is a really great lesson.
Well, Becky, it's always fun to talk to you. It's just, I think, you know, that what you and all of the group there at Nat Geo do, really for the world, you open the eyes of so many people and give so many thousands and thousands of hours of joy to people. I want to thank you, really. You're part of the solution for this horrible pandemic time, that we have some, you know, people like you who have put together these wonderful books.
Oh, well, thank you so much. That means a lot. I appreciate so much you having me on the show, and I hope everyone there is happy and healthy and, you know, get a book and get reading.
Okay. Becky Bain, thank you so much for joining me today. And we'll have you back. I'm sure you're working on another book right now.
Yes, many books.
Always. Okay. Thank you so much,
care.
Becky. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Wow. Oh, she is so sweet. I really, you know, it's so funny. I still have so many of the, I have a lot of the Nat Geo books, magazines, because I loved them as a kid. They were a source of, you know, particularly in small communities where we didn't have a library. When I was a kid, we didn't have a library. Our only outside source was actually, I think, Nat Geo. I think my mother had Life magazine and a few things like that. But my childhood was mostly comic books and Nat Geo books. And one of the reasons I think I learned to read so well is that I had the Nat Geo books to encourage me. And so it was really, really fantastic. Now, we're going to take a commercial break, and I'll be right back. And I've got another book for kids. This one on a more serious note, but it's fascinating.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's Patsy with a Z, and I am back. In a little while, I'm going to be talking to, I think, two authors, or at least one author, about a book. It's a book written specifically for children, and it talks about a serious subject, but you know, kids are they're getting very serious about subjects right now. And I think that it's a book that will help children to understand, perhaps, even what's going on today. So I'm looking forward to having their call in from, I think they're calling in from New York. I don't know. I was looking at the weather up there, up north. It's really still cold in so many places. And of course, yesterday, I think we had almost hit 90. It was, Ed, did we hit 90 yesterday?
No, we had all that rain yesterday.
Oh, it was the day before it was 90, I think.
Yeah,
that was beautiful. Yeah, I think I sort of fogged out yesterday, but the day before it's almost 90, and we hope that it's killing all of this stuff that's around. But it's really, really so gorgeous here. And anybody who, you know, once things open up again, I'm sure that everybody will want to come down to Florida because it is such a wonderful place. And for those of you who have been stuck in apartments in the north, I really feel so sympathetic to people who are in New York City and who are in apartments. And it's not easy in the best of times, but it's certainly not easy when you're stuck there. And if you're in a tall building and you have to use an elevator, I don't know what I would do. First of all, I wouldn't be in a tall building because I don't like elevators. But if you are and you have to, you know, social distance, it's real hard in an elevator. In our building, we ask people just one person at a time or one family at a time because we want to be safe and not sorry. So anyway, I just want to again tell people that you can go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com, and if you have a comment or if you have a question, and if you decided to start writing, you know, you've had this story in your head, you've had an idea in your head, this is an ideal time. Really try, you know, when this is over, in a week or 2 weeks or whenever, you'll look back and you'll say, what did I accomplish during that time? Well, many people will have cleaned out their closets. I mean, I think that's one of the first things that people did. They cleaned their cabinets, they cleaned their closets, they organized things. And I did that too. Of course, for me, reading takes up a great deal of my time. So I did have a lot of time here to read. And it's funny, until you can't run around, you don't realize how much time you do run around. Simple things, you know, now you have to really plan when you go out. You want to make the most of it. And it reminded me of my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law used to cook on Sundays. She had her food, got everything, and cooked on Sunday for the entire week. She would make, you know, what if it was a spaghetti sauce or stew or meatloaf or whatever, but she would cook only one day a week. I remember when she first came to visit us in America, and I'm cooking every day. I'm cooking here. I'm doing this. I'm shopping this. And she's like, after about a week of that, she said, you're like, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing this? Why don't you just cook one day a week? And now I haven't quite followed that. And I, although I did try the for many years, you know, I was busy with the homeschooling. So I did do a lot of cooking on Sunday that would last, you know, at least until Wednesday. And then Thursday usually was tuna casserole. I think most Thursdays in my life were tuna casseroles. But it is a wonderful idea. And so it's a time that you can sort of think through things, make plans, get organized. And one of the things is, now we're talking about a book. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about a book about a subject that required a lot of research. And I tell you that one of the joys of life, in addition to reading and writing, is to do research. I love research. You get lost in research. So if you have a story about a family member or about a favorite historical character, or you just read, as I mentioned, I was reading a book one day, a couple of years ago, I was reading a book and I read the footnote. And the footnote was so fascinating. And it simply said that an Indian Maharaja poisoned a British resident to his court with diamond dust and arsenic. And I thought, well, that's funny. That's a strange thing. I didn't believe it, actually. And so I started doing research, and I did research, and I did research, and I did like hundreds of hours of research. And sure enough, it was true, and it's turned out to be a really fascinating story. And I've been working on this book forever, and it's called The Baroda Brief. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever finish it, because I can't. Partly because I keep doing the research. The research is so much fun. I'm not, you know, I like somebody to read it eventually, but I'm just having so much fun doing the research and getting to know a part of a country that I knew nothing about when I started. I knew nothing about the people. I knew nothing about the customs or anything to do with the country. And now I'm like in expert at a certain period in time, and that all comes from just one little footnote. So if you read something, you think of something, it's like Jackie Minetti, who wrote One Tiny Spark. It's something that there she saw something on television, and she said, whoa, that's an interesting story, and she followed it up. So if you're watching television and you see a story about something, think about just jumping in wholehearted and doing the research and discovering not just the story, but discovering yourself, discovering what you are capable of doing, because people don't realize sometimes what they are capable of doing until they start doing it. And you get deeper and deeper into a subject, and soon you find that you become an expert on a subject, and because it's a subject that you really care about. And so now I'm going to be talking to an author, I'm not sure if they're both coming on or just one, about a very, two authors who became obsessed with a story. And so it's really exciting. You know, this is what I tell you. Find a subject that interests you. Run with it. Just take off, and you never know what's going to happen. You might win a Pulitzer Prize. You don't know. You don't know until you start working on it. And so, this book, as I said, today is a day that I'm thinking about children and about books for them. And certainly, if you want a great gift book, the Nat Geo Kids Almanac for 2021. Can you believe it's going to be 2021? Ugh. I don't know. We were just having that Y2D2, whatever it was, at the turn of the century. And now we're heading to 2021. But 2020 is a year in which you will never forget. I mean, this is like the year that it's as much as you would like, perhaps, to forget it. But on the other hand, it is also an opportunity for families to have real deep discussions about things that are happening in the world, the importance of paying attention to things that are happening in the world. And so often, it's a matter of involving yourself. If you have a subject, if you have something that sort of you've thought about, then that's the important thing. Run with it, grab it, and find that joy on paper of writing about it. So I'm so thrilled here, really, to talk to two wonderful authors, Candy Cooper and Mark Aronson.
Yep.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, today I already did an earlier episode about Nat Geo New Almanac for 2021, and in that book they talk about many subjects, among them conservation, about green energy. They talk about all sorts of things to encourage children to get involved. And so
right,
I was really fascinated by Poisoned Water, your book, and to tell us about it, because you've written a book for children to try to understand. And I feel so sorry for kids. They have so much to understand now. But tell us about how you started, how the story started, and about your both, you each had a certain area of expertise.
So actually, your question fits perfectly with how the book came about, because it was a librarian in Michigan who works with young people, so middle graders and teenagers, who said to me, "We really need a book on Flint." And what she meant was that young people that age are both becoming aware of the world, are becoming aware of how the world ignores them, and also how they can and must speak up. And so I knew she was absolutely right, that Flint was the right subject for that age, but I also knew that I was not the person who would be able to go to Flint and be the journalist, be the reporter to get the stories. And my wife knew Candy through a book group together and suggested Candy, and I asked her, and I didn't have to ask twice.
Well, you made the right selection, because Candy was a Pulitzer Prize finalist and won many, many things, including, I have to say, that you wrote for or write for, does it still exist, the Detroit Free Press?
Yes, actually, the Detroit Free Press does exist.
It does exist.
Into the Flint Star.
Well, I haven't been back. I grew up in Highland Park, Michigan.
Oh, wonderful.
Right there near Detroit. In Detroit, it's part of Detroit. And so that the Detroit Free Press was our paper of choice.
Right. I understand.
So tell us how you got a call and you're asked to write
from
a book
Mark.
About a very serious subject. Flint, Michigan.
Right. And I am also from Michigan. I was born and raised there. I studied in Michigan. I worked at the Free Press. And I also, as you said, have done a lot of investigative work. And I've also written about and for young adults. So when Mark called, it seemed like sort of the perfect fit. And I was very excited about working on the book. The other reason I think that it's important for young adults is because it's about youth. It's about young adults, and it's also about the youngest kids in Flint who were most vulnerable to the crisis, 0 to 6. And they're the ones who were exposed to high levels of lead. And lead, as we know, is stored in the body for years and years. It can affect the brain and behavior, and it can be passed on to a next generation. It has genetic aspects to it. So, for that reason as well, I think the story is really useful for young adults.
Well, let's take a step back. It was 2014, And one woman stepped forward. And tell us about Leanne Walters.
So Leanne had noticed, she and her husband had noticed that the water coming from their tap was turning different colors and that it smelled bad. And she called the city to try to find out if she could get it tested in some way. And after some time, she learned that her water, the lead levels in her water were so high that the first time they tested it, it exceeded the measurements of the instrument they were using. So she began to do research on lead in water. She started going to council meetings and speaking out. She brought her bottles of water to council meetings and held them up, as many Flint citizens did. So she was one of the people, one of the mothers, who sort of became an activist by virtue of just seeing what her water was like. And that story happened over and over across Flint and created quite a large group of people who were complaining and protesting and trying to take action about the water.
So, you know, this story really shows what one person can start. And I think for children, for young adults, that they realize that they do have power. If they see something wrong, if they feel something's yes. not right, they really should step forward.
Yeah, that's all the more true now because they have devices. They can record things, they can photograph things, they can film things, and they can, as the people in Flint did, seek help, seek experts that they can share information with.
Yes. And one of the young adults we feature in the book is Keyshawn Wade. He was a high school senior when I talked to him. And he has said that his takeaway from the book was that when he was growing up, he looked around and saw a status quo that was unchangeable, that was just the hand you were dealt. And what he learned through the water crisis is that you can have an effect on that. You can change that. And so I think that's a wonderful takeaway for kids, that yes, they can have an impact on their environment, whatever that form that takes.
It is very important. And as I mentioned, I was just talking to Nat Geo, one of the editors from Nat Geo, and they have a challenge there where they challenge children to come out with solutions. And
yeah,
they
wow.
can win prizes, they can win all sorts of things. And last year's prize, well, this year for 2020, came out with the idea of how to clean plastics from the ocean. So this is
wow.
it's this kind of encouragement that children need. And what you've written in this
actually,
book.
Actually, I want to add something there. After Flint, there was a 12-year-old girl in California who invented a new test for finding lead in the water. So it was, she was inspired by hearing about what kids her age were going through. And it's also true, even on a different level, once it became clear that the water in Flint was undrinkable, there were youth groups throughout the country that were collecting money to send water to Flint to gather things. So young people can be very actively involved, whether it's something, a crisis in their community or assisting other communities.
Yes. And I think it's really important when you're talking about the environment to young people that you tell them stories where there is an impact, that where there's a change that occurs for the better. That's empowering for them. And that's what the Flint story, to some extent, has as well.
Well, I think you've done a beautiful job with this book. And it's an important book. And so is there a website or a place there where people can see more about it?
I would go to the Bloomsbury, which is the publisher website. There is that. The book, today is the pub date, so the book is available anywhere books are sold. And also, our publisher has been working with an organization in Flint. Candy, can you remind me of what?
Yes, it's the Flint Community Foundation, and there's a fund called the Flint Kids Fund, which is working directly with kids who have been affected by the water crisis.
So we don't have much time. Are things better now in Flint? What's happening?
They are better, but they're not. But there's more to be done. There's still lead pipes, lead service lines in the ground that have to be excavated. That work was interrupted by the pandemic. Citizens of Flint are still waiting to hear about whether there will be any criminal charges brought against government officials. The Attorney General's office is still working on that. And as I said before, you have children with neurological issues who are desperately needing help in the Flint schools.
Well, I think you both have done a wonderful job of bringing this forward. Candy Cooper and Mark Aronson, you are really to be just complimented for a book that's very readable, and with these personal stories of the children, so that all the readers will understand better what happened there. And hopefully, you know, I thought, you know, we knew that the Romans were being lead poisoned. And what did it take?
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
2020. You know, it's like, it boggles the mind sometimes, doesn't it?
It does.
And I'm sure the more research you did, the more you were sort of flabbergasted by the stupidity of the people involved and the fact that they tried to hide it for so many years. So it's wonderful that you've exposed it. And I want to thank you both for being on Joy on Paper today, because it's been a real joy
so
to
much.
Talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And good luck with the book. I will promote it and put it on my website too, okay?
Oh, thank you, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye. Oh, my goodness. What is going on with this world? I mean, we know the Romans went cuckoo because they were drinking lead water. And the same happened, I think, in England at various times. I mean, what does it take? Sometimes our leaders are really stupid, because I can't imagine why anyone would allow. What were these people in Flint doing? What were the commissioners doing? What were they drinking? Perrier? I mean, what were they doing? It makes you crazy. Anyway, I don't have any more time today, but it's been a joy to talk and be back here behind the microphone at Tantalk Radio Network Studio, and getting to look at Big Ed in the control room. It's such a joy to look at him, I tell you. Remember, everybody, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a television series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So get busy, a page a day, and in a year you'll have a book. And thank you, Big Ed, for everything you do here in the studio to keep it clean and organized and germ-free. Okay, bye-bye now.